Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands you need, from athletic stuff, like a full-court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff, like a half-mile stroll. Get those steps in! And for morning hikes up the mountain trail, good pace, to nighttime ghost stories from the camping chair. What a twist! Whatever level of active, Sierra loves it all. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
5 a.m., I'm up with a crisp Celsius energy drink. Running 12 miles today. Grab a green juice, quick change, and head to work. Meetings, workshops, one more Celsius, no slowing down. Working late, but obviously still meeting the girls for a little dancing. Celsius, live, fit, go. Grab a cold, refreshing Celsius at your local retailer or locate now at Celsius.com.
Where's your playlist taking you? Down the highway? To the mountains? Or just into daydream mode while you're stuck in traffic? With over 4,000 hotels worldwide, Best Western is there to help you make the most of your getaway, wherever that is. Because the only thing better than a great playlist is a great trip. Life's the trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
This episode is brought to you by Peloton. Break through the busiest time of year with the brand new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus. Powered by Peloton IQ. With real-time guidance and endless ways to move, you can personalize your workouts and train with confidence, helping you reach your goals in less time. Let yourself run, lift, sculpt, push, and go. Explore the new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus at onepeloton.com.
Welcome to the Antler Up Podcast, brought to you by Tethered, the world's best saddle hunting gear, and we got a fun show for you all today. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to this week's episode of the Antler Up Podcast. We're on episode 232, and we're going to be keeping things simple again this week. And this week, I went down to the shop, Average Jack Archery, sat down with Nathan Sellers, and man, that was one of my favorite conversations back in January, that the conversation I had with Nate. And right now, for me, I'm so fired up to get ready for hunting season. Nate is still in the thick of things when it comes to competition with archery. I'm thoroughly enjoying my time doing it. I love it. But obviously my heart is obviously in the bow hunting world. But with that being said, we wanted to keep things simple as far as getting into the bow shop, bow setups, mobile hunting gear, clothing gear. It's a quick one. It's not a very long, drawn-out episode. I might even do another one with some other friends or other people with this same topic, as far as like the gear aspect of things, of keeping things simple, just because there's 100 ways that you could do this, and they're all, you can make it as simple as that you would like it to be. So with that being said, be on the lookout maybe for some more regarding this, and if there's someone that you would like me to maybe even have on regarding that, let me know. But Nate really talks about like dubbing down your mobile setup when it comes to, for us, we're saddle hunters, right? So he talks about even this, the self-filming gear, what he uses, what he really is thinks is, where can you really save money and get a more bang for your buck, and why when it comes to maybe some specific archery equipment, certain things like that. So really enjoyed this conversation. Nate is one of the greatest individuals out there. I know I said that last week too about Andy May, but Nate is, if you, anybody that has met Nate knows exactly what I'm saying and what I'm talking about. Nate, to me, doesn't have a bad bone in his body. So hope you enjoy this one. Hopefully you're getting after it. Hopefully you have a great 4th of July with some friends, with your loved ones and family. So enjoy that. And with that being said, thank you so much for your continued support. If you like what you hear, go leave a review on Spotify, iTunes, share it with your friends and family. Those of you that purchased the shirts from me, thank you so much. I can't explain how much I appreciate you, your patience with that, as I worked with a new local vendor. And a you know, thank you so much. So we'll see you next week, everybody. Antler up. And real quick, before we get into this week's episode, talking about gear, Tethered is having a garage sale. So you're going to be able to go over there, get a Menace saddle, get an Eberhardt saddle, all for both of them, each $99. You could get some old school Sishauler, the OGs, for $11.50. You could get a Nushin for $14.99. You got Versus straps for $11.99. You also have the old school recliner for $19.99. So just some of the old things that over at Tethered that they have. So check out tethered.com, the new website. Check it out and see what the sale is all about. If you need to get some, you know, haulers, and actually Nate talks about that in this week's episode. So maybe you want to pick up a couple of those for some of your gear, and you'll see why. Other than that, thanks again for tuning in, everybody. Antler up.
What's up, everybody? So welcome back to the Antler Up podcast. And we're in a dead dog. We're in the heat of summer right now, man. We're closing up June. Last time we did this podcast, Nate, it was dead cold. It was winter. It was January. I think I just had a baby at the time.
Yeah, it was gross.
It was gross.
Well, the baby's great.
Yeah,
the baby's, the weather was gross. Yeah,
depending on, you know, yeah, who you're talking to about all that stuff. But long story short, briefly, I just want to recap a couple things. Number one, we discussed what was coming up for you shooting, and you had Lancaster Archery, which you did a hell of a job. So number one, congrats on that.
Thanks, yeah.
Two, right now the 3D season is in full steam. You kind of pushed me over the edge to get my button geared and saying,
like,
hey,
way over,
right? And I do want to just touch upon this and tell a funny story with that. So dude, you're crushing it. And it's so cool to see that.
It's a miracle.
it's not
a miracle. Well, like, it is. Like, Franklin was a miracle. RBD, I'm shooting just like every other normal guy.
Yeah.
But for some reason, Franklin, I just came out of the woodwork. I don't know. I'm happy for it. Camera one, camera two. Yeah. I'm happy for it.
Yeah.
That's good.
No, man. So congrats on that. You're shooting lights out, and it's so fun to watch and to see your success, just because when I'm rooting for you, you know what I mean? It's like one of those.
We all root for everybody in this area. It's really cool.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
Yeah. So keep that up. And so the funny story is this. So when we started chatting about me, like, man, I should just try it. Right. Yeah. I just want to see all that stuff. And RBD on paper looked so fun, and it is. So
the humor is in how much fun it is.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. So let me just quickly backtrack. So I took a lot of time to practice, and May Montage Mountain was the first coming out of getting outside doing stuff.
You killed it.
I crushed it. Like, Jim and I were just busting the other day, and he was like, dude, you were like,
I mean, you text me like, here's what I just shot, here's what I just did. And I was like,
yeah.
Oh man, like, I'm in trouble. Like, I'm genuinely like, I don't shoot long distance. And RBD's max 50 for the open guys.
Right.
And I knew you were going to go shoot pins probably. And I was like, man, I'll tell you what, he's got a legit shot.
Yeah.
And you were there.
Yeah.
You
know? And then I went into that first ASA of calling, doing those, and I came in second place
for
that.
Was very solid.
Right. Very solid. There were a couple shots I wish I had, but even that one for me, Nate, was, I thought, again, where I was in, I thought I was doing the horizontal.
Yeah.
And I practiced, and then I changed my clasp that day, and I used the slider. Mm-hmm. And I still did fairly fine, but I was like, man, if I knew, I would have had that 0.19 pin instead of the 0.15 on that UltraView horizontal.
Yeah.
I was like, think there would have been one or two targets I would have felt a little bit more comfortable at. So, but still, I shot 186, came in second place, and then RBD came and it kicked me right in the nuts.
I mean, it was, but it was like, it's like one of those things where, like, you know, people think, oh man, I'm terrible. But if you look at it, there are guys that, like, I looked at the scores of Franklin, mm-hmm. right? Now, what they did at Franklin this year, way harder course last year compared to this year. I mean, if you look at the scores, mm-hmm. much higher across the board. But, like, the people that shot Franklin last year that killed it right. were, like, middle of the pack this year. And right. guys that have no business, such as myself, who haven't shot, I haven't shot at a national event outside of Lancaster in years. And showed up and you podium the thing, but it's just, but that's what it is. You can go crush Montage Mountain and it's so good. And the mm-hmm. courses are so tough in Pennsylvania in particular, IBO, known class or unknown class, whatever. Although it'll spit you out the next mm-hmm. weekend. You can mm-hmm. kill it. It's so flip. There are very few people, and particularly in the Northeast circuit, that can just literally every time they show up, they're a guarantee.
Yeah.
There's very, very, very few yeah. people.
I'll tell you what, though. I love just watching people shoot now. Like, I've always respected it. Like we talked before, I've been shooting a bow since I've been 10 years old. And, you know, it's always been a part of me and all that type of stuff and on and off. But more so recently, man, this summer I really got a whole new respect for just anybody. I don't yeah. care. I don't even, like, I've mentioned it on podcasts where, do what I did. Like, just take that plunge. Go shoot, even with your buddies at a local 3D course yeah. where you're able to go ahead and just keep track of score instead
yeah,
of...
Yeah, but put a little skin in the game.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what it, yeah.
Yeah, 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 you yeah. know, it was a good time. It's good stuff, man. So continue with that, okay? That's yeah. that's good luck to you, man, because I love seeing it. I got my last one this weekend for, well, until September, that other local one that we have.
Super excited for that.
Yeah, that one's neat.
Ooh. Yeah, if anybody's local to Central PA, got to go check out down at Bedford. Is yeah. it Bedford Rotten Club?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Whatever it is, yeah. we'll post links places. Yeah. But yeah, but Kelly Weathersby and Matt Dillon are help putting that thing on. That's going to be and I think more shoots need to happen. It's a bow hunting only shoot.
Yeah.
So only bow hunting setups, 15 yeah. inch shorter bars. You can shoot a standard diameter or smaller, so yep. micro or 5 yep. mil.
So wasn't it like 6.5 was the biggest?
6.5, yeah, it's the biggest Easton. Yeah. Easton's the biggest diameter for that. And it's still a hunting arrow, screw in points. I mean, bow hunting distances, I mean, it's brilliant.
Yeah.
It's absolutely brilliant. More shoots need to be like that.
Yeah, that's going to be fun. I'm excited for that one. So, unfortunately, I won't be able to make that second or the last leg of RBD. That's my anniversary weekend.
Yeah.
We were talking, and my luck, I mean, I probably wouldn't have a shot anyway, but, like, let's just say some miracle, I just shoot yeah. lights out on Friday. I don't know if it'd be a good idea for me to say, hey, Sunday I have to go back and shoot. My wife's been phenomenal this past month in June because literally every weekend we've done something.
Yeah, you've been out a lot.
That's why I'm kind of excited this weekend to wrap it up and get the Elite Era out and start cutting some hunting arrows and waiting for you to get some mini mags back in.
Oh, dude, I'm so excited for my Grim Reaper order. Yeah. Like, I have like six slips back here. I got to pull broadheads for yeah. people already. They've been yeah. coming in looking for them.
Yeah. yeah. So I'm excited for it. So that's why I came in. So last week's episode, I had Andy May on
awesome.
Podcast. Thanks, man. Andy's one of the...
Just the best.
You know, and somebody said it perfectly. Andy, every podcast, his tone is always the same.
The same.
He's a very well-spoken individual. I met him, and he was the same way from a couple of years ago when we worked at Tether Booth at ATA. But, man, for how much recognition he gets and how successful he is, he's just
a dude.
He is just a dude. And, man, I love it. He's like honestly, he reminds me a lot of you.
Well, truthfully, he's one of the people I aspire to be like.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know Andy from – I don't know if Andy knows my content or whatever. That doesn't matter. But when I see his stuff or hear him talk, I'm like, that right mm-hmm. there. That right there.
Yeah.
If you could tell any kid who wants to get in the outdoor industry a person, it's like, you be that guy. You yeah. be that guy, you're going places.
Yeah.
You might not look and you might not act and talk like you're going places, but he's going places.
Yeah.
And that, yeah. So that was so cool that you had him on.
Yeah.
He's such a good dude to listen to.
Yeah, he is. And the main premise of that was like to keep things simple a little bit, right?
Yep.
And that's why I said, man, Nate, this is going to be killer because we're, like I said, right now, for me personally, I'm getting fired up for hunting season. So
I get twinges of
yeah,
it. We had that massive heat wave and it evaporated on me. Like, I was like, I don't want hunting season.
Yeah.
It's like 900 degrees.
Yeah.
But then we had like that 52 degree morning a couple days ago. Mm-hmm. And I was like,
Yeah, I go outside. I shot a couple of coffee, and I was like, "Ooh, I should be out scouting right now."
And yeah, I need a hoodie on for this one. This is starting to get good.
I know.
Yeah.
So, and that's where I wanted you to come in and really talk about keeping things simple, with bow setup, with just we could talk about clothing type stuff, but like that's where I really wanted to hear your perspective, because last year you killed your buck with a bear bow.
Absolutely.
You know, Whisker Biscuit.
Yeah.
You and just,
I mean, I put it together like 9 days before the season started. So like you can't get super involved. If you have a very limited time window, you can't go get super involved. So what can you do in that very limited time window to keep it simple, keep it very lethal? I took that bow, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Indiana. I didn't kill in Ohio. I got close. Killed in Indiana, killed several deer here in Pennsylvania with it, and had zero issues.
Right.
So it's like, what can you, if you really had to boil it down and actually think about it, it makes your bow hunting experience so much. You're worried less about the bow and worried more about your shooting, because you don't have time to sit there and fuss.
Right.
It's great.
So let's kind of look at it like this. So we have an individual, say, like myself, maybe someone else that maybe even that likes to shoot their bow a lot, right? But man, they do take it overboard or whatever as far as like their setups and all that type of stuff. But when you look at, like, and you just said, if someone has a simple setup and they don't have to worry about it and they could really focus on their shot, I could speak of experience of, especially last year, like once I got everything set up, I did that. I said, now let's just focus
just
on shooting.
Just don't touch it again.
Right.
Yeah.
And then when the heat of the moments came, it was great. I literally just took the time and focused on me for me, quote unquote shooting.
Yeah.
You know, so when you look at that, you know, simplicity is the king. Right?
Simplicity is the king, because when things are simple, you build in the widest margin of error. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is, if you're building something, let's say we're in 3D season right now. I could make a really, really, really light arrow, screaming fast. You know, we don't have a speed limit in the MBO. So I could shoot as fast as I possibly can, help me out on judging. Mm-hmm. But it's not going to be very forgiving. So my margin of error is not very wide. And same thing if it's really slow. Might be easy to tune, but then I'm losing it. So what is the middle ground that gives me the most amount of margin of error one way or the other? Mm-hmm. And so the same thing's true of your hunting setup. If you build a really heavy arrow, really light arrow, really fast, whatever, it's the same exact deal. So if you can keep it simple in that middle and give you a good margin of error for when you make a bad shot, because we all do, when the arrow is, you misjudge the distance or the arrow doesn't hit exactly where you want it to go, where is it going to give you the most margin of error in all the facets? And when people do that and they realize that, you know, that arrow was simple to tune, it flies really well, groups really well, it seems to have good speed. You know, people don't like hearing an arrow that sounds like it's going 205 feet a second to the target. They want to hear it, you know, hit hard and quickly. And when they do that, that builds confidence. And then your setup is simple and all you have to do is focus on shooting.
Yeah.
And that is how everybody gets better.
Yeah.
You do not get better by a great tuned arrow. You get better because you are shooting more and more and more and more.
Right. Are you big into tuning, like paper tuning, a hunting setup and all
stuff?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't go, so I have videos on the channel, you know, Average Egg Archery, and you can go look, and I have, you know, how to broadhead tune, how to bear shaft tune, how to, you know, shoot through paper and all sort of stuff. At this point in my life, I really just paper tune it. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, true story, I shot that bear. I set that bear bow up 9 days before the season. I put a Whisker Biscuit on it, and I made the executive decision that I'm going to show that an average dude can kill normal deer. And then, of course, I killed this thing for the video users. Got this, you know, I don't know how big he's in the 120s, 130s, PA, you know, public land deer. But I wanted to do that. And in the process of doing it, put that Whisker Biscuit on there, put a normal arrow, I shoot through it. And it was not a bullet hole. Mm-hmm. And you know what I did? I just left it alone. Mm-hmm. It was like a little high right tear. I mean, it wasn't massive, maybe a quarter inch. And I said, I'm leaving it alone. And I shot it at group tune. Broadheads flew okay. I screwed a 125 grain Grim Reaper mini mag on that thing. I killed three deer with it. And I had zero penetration issues, zero hunting issues, zero anything.
Yeah.
And it was just left it alone, and I just focused on learning, because I had 9 days to get acclimated to that bow. I never shot it before. So I had 9 days to focus on me and that bow. How are we going to group? You know, when I start doing weird things to my grip or face pressure, how does it react? Because those are the things people don't think about. They think,
I got to tune.
And they forget that when in the heat of the moment, you're gripping the bow sideways and you're mashed into your kisser button or whatever, totally changes how that bow reacts.
Tanner brought that up to me. the one day, and I kind of, he really had me thinking a little bit, because he was like, how do you think your bow performed under pressure? And I was like, I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, for me, that was a great question.
Just, great question.
Just because, like you said, I could be backyard hero, mm-hmm. letting a rip feel good, and then I get to the practice range and I'm okay, but then it's that first target when
that first target scares the living crap out of you.
Right. You know what I mean?
I'd rather have him walk on me 10 times than shoot that first target mm-hmm. once. That first target is infinitely scary. You want to know what your bow does under pressure? Mm-hmm. Go shoot something for money.
Yeah.
Or for just have a little skin in the game, right? You know, go with your buddies and do like a dollar a target.
Right.
That's enough. It doesn't mm-hmm. have to be thousands. Mm-hmm. Just a dollar a target and see who wins. I mean, that's enough to put you under pressure yeah. to really see how you're actually going to react.
Right. So when you're talking about arrows and we want to talk about simplicity, that's kind of the trend that I've gone under the last 2 years for sure. Again, 27 and a half inch draw length, you know, and I'm cutting my arrow to about 27 and some change a little bit.
Sure.
I like that 460, 465.
Yeah, a lot of people do.
The total arrow weight. I'm, like I said, I've been throwing that mini mag.
Great.
I really enjoyed that last year. I'm going three fletch. I'm just keeping things as simple as possible and not doing a 600 grain. I want to smash it because I'm, you know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
I want to be decent speed, and I also want to have something that's going to hit pack a punch.
Right.
I've got a pass through on all five deer.
You're giving yourself the most margin for error. That's mm-hmm. really what you are. Mm-hmm. That's the best way I can describe it to people. Because, and particularly recently, like, you know, everybody's like, oh, you know, the industry has been doing it wrong. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure the engineers that have been making arrows since God only knows how when have probably thought this through, that like if you walk into my shop and you buy this arrow and he cuts it to this length for your draw length and your spine, you're probably going to have the most amount of performance out of that than if you went outside, you know, the bell curve is what right. I always say. And so if you try to leave that in, now you swim at your own risk.
Right.
Right. And you might have phenomenal success at both ends. But if you don't have success at those, it's usually pretty egregious. So like if you have a non-successful, you know, in the middle, in the normal mm-hmm. setup area, it's usually down to shot placement for most of the time.
Right.
Or you screw on a broadhead that's way too big, you know, big 2.5 inch mechanical with a, you know, with something weird like that. Then that's where you lose your margin for error. But it's very wide. Like you say, you like 450, 460. I like 450. I know guys that like 410, mm-hmm. normal fixed blade or a small cutting mechanical. And dude, it's everything.
Yeah.
Everything at yeah. every distance, 50 and in. It's no problem.
Yeah.
It's not wild and crazy.
Yeah.
It's just simple.
Even if it's, you're not a cup of tea. I mean, I know Dan Staten from Elk Shape. I mean, he's shooting elk with like a 430. Grain arrow.
Good for him, man.
I mean, like, whether that's your cup of tea or not, but I mean, I know that's...
I would do it. I would rather shoot a 430 grain arrow at an elk than a 530 grain arrow at an elk. Because I'm starting to leave what has been simple. Because mm-hmm. now I'm adding extra weight up mm-hmm. front. Now I'm, you know, maybe I'm doing this thing with a wrap and a four fletch on the back end. Now I'm doing... But just... You're adding other variables that when those arrows were built, that probably wasn't the idea.
Right.
I'll say it won't work. Of course it works. There's proof all over the board. But from a shop owner perspective in particular, when you start adding other variables that I can't control as a shop owner, as an arrow builder, then it starts to make you a little bit nervous.
What's the one piece of equipment that when someone comes in and they're like, whether they're on a budget or not, where do you kind of steer people to of something that, you know, hey, we could spend less money on this because I find this piece to be more important than that type of ordeal. And down the line, yes, you can upgrade that basically. Right. Is there something that you favor one over the
other? It's always arrows. People think they need to spend an absolute pile of money on arrows. Like it's just like the thing. And a lot of people like to, you know, There are places to be different mm-hmm. in archery. So, for example, you and I shoot Elite bows, right? Mm-hmm. Elite's not the most popular brand in our area, but they make dang good bows. But it doesn't matter if you dry fire your Elite or you dry fire your Matthews or your Hoyt or your Bowtech or your Prime or whatever, you're not going to be able to get parts like immediately. Mm-hmm. It's not going to happen. So you can walk into any store. They're not going to have your cams and your limbs and everything and your strings. But if you, let's say, and we get this all the time, here we are in the central part of the state, we have guys that have camps up in Tioga County, Warren County. They drive from Lancaster. So they'll drive right past our shop, they'll pick up some stuff, and they'll go to camp. And a lot of guys will be like, yeah, I'm going to switch up things this year. And I say, don't. If you're going to buy an arrow that you can always find no matter where you go.
Okay.
So that's like an Easton bow hunter. That's a Gold Tip XT hunter. That's a Victory V-Force. Something that's a budget-friendly arrow. There's different grades. You can, of course, upgrade if you want. But there are so many times you hear the horror stories. Guys have their quiver on the tailgate, close the tailgate, they just sheared off six arrows.
And now they have none.
They have nothing. So now what do you do? Well, if you have some direct-to-consumer, bougie, 600, you're up the creek without a paddle. Now you walk in a local bow shop. He's not going to have that.
Yeah.
He's not going to. But you know what he's got? He's got about 10 boxes of Gold Tip 340 Spine XT Hunters or Victory View or Easton Bow Hunters or something like that. All of a sudden now you're in an hour, you're back to shooting shape again.
Right.
So when that in terms of that simplicity, you don't think, it's an elk trip. It's an antelope. No, it could be right here. Mm-hmm. Be right here on Front Street. You go to put your bow back in the car, you close the tailgate or you smash an arrow or you sit on them. I mean, there's so many things you could do. And if you have something that it's overly complicated, it's not going to be easy to replace, and particularly in the middle of the season.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
It's huge.
Here I'm thinking like maybe – you know, how, because like you said, you shot the Whisker Biscuit last year.
Yeah.
I know Byron Horton's going to that. Like, just keeping things simple, eliminating something that could go wrong in the field.
I mean, so the rest would be second,
yeah.
Right? But again, it still comes back to the same thing. You can go and buy a rest, but I would want to make sure wherever I'm headed to, wherever I normally hunt, that they can service that thing immediately.
Right.
So, you know, we have QAD, we have Trophy Ridge, we have Hamsky. Those are our big three. Mm-hmm. So if you come in with a Ripcord makes a good rest, but I can't help you. Like, right. I can't, you know, QAD is a lifetime warranty. If you have a problem with QAD, I just pull a box off, give you a new rest, you're out the door, and I ship the old one back, and they fix it.
Right.
No issues there. Same thing with Hamsky. So If you're going to try to do something, make sure that in your area that you're going to hunt, you're going to travel to hunt to, keep it simple that they can also help you in that. Because you never need it until you need it. Right?
Yeah.
So it's one of those things.
Yeah, I like that. Because, you know, right now, are you getting people coming in and picking up their new bows or getting things all...
It's starting to pick up.
A little bit.
It's starting to pick up. It is very weather specific. You know, like we were talking about, when it's cold... Guys kind of get the itch, kind of get the feeling. We're approaching July 4th here. It's coming up. But usually right after July 4th, people start thinking about deer season a little bit. The diehards are in here, though, for sure.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, man, I'm so done.
Yeah.
Like, I just want 3D season to be over with. I love 3D season, but I'm, like, ready for the fall. I'm like, you got, like, three more months.
Yeah, chill out.
Just chill out. just relax.
Yeah.
They're starting to come in. And people are starting to figure out that if you show up to a bow shop in August, it's a lot more hectic than if you show up in June, July. Yeah. So it's starting to get a little bit better in that regard.
Do people really understand that yet? I mean, I feel like...
Oh, 99% of people still don't. But we're starting to, at least in our area, we're starting to
get
inform.
Better.
We're starting to inform people a little bit more.
Because, man, like, I've been doing this now for over four years, the podcast. And it always gets to this time for the last 4 years where I always... If you
Now's
need,
the time.
Now is the time. I cannot stress that enough.
I can't stress. And it's not, and for me at least, I don't know about other shops in the area, for me at least, it's not a labor problem.
Right.
Like, I can turn stuff out pretty quickly. It's the product getting into the shop problem. Mm-hmm. So I have product on the wall to sell you, but the biggest thing people need is strings and cables. Mm-hmm. People, you know, call, and this is a huge misnomer, but they think that string cables are all roughly the same size. Mm-hmm. So I'm probably stocking them all. And that is just not the case. I mean, as you know, there are thousands of dimensions between control cables, strings, split cables, crossbow, you know, this material, that material.
Geez, even my Kairos to your Ethos.
Oh, it's like three different sizes.
Right.
Yeah, it's completely.
Even though it's a 33-inch.
And it's a 33-inch bow, same company, same year, totally different thing.
Yeah.
And then, of course, if you want anything other than black, Godspeed, it has to be built. So what people don't understand is, like, right now, some of the biggest string builders are like a week, 2 weeks out right now. That's the best it gets.
Yeah.
You come see me after July 4th, it's probably 2 to 3 weeks. You come like the third week of July, it's 3 to 4 weeks. You come to me by August, the second week of August, you're looking 4 to 6 weeks at a minimum. And you're like, well, the season's going to start by then. I'm like, yeah, you could have brought this to me January 1st. The season closed back in December. Right. Like, you could have just turned around and done it because you clearly weren't going to shoot.
Right.
It's the guys right now that are like, I think I'm going to shoot my bow. They'll pull it out. I'm like, that looks a little bit sketchy. They'll wander in here and just by sheer happenstance, they'll be like, oh, I need new strings.
Yeah.
Done. It's done. I'm like, and they're like, I'm so glad I did this now and not August. But that population is very small.
Yeah.
It's mostly by happenstance. Yeah.
So here's another, we could kind of transition from equipment, well, from bow equipment to, man, you've been doing mobile hunting for quite a long time now. Talk about your transition from a little bit of how can someone get into it or that they are, dub it down, maybe keep things a little bit simpler, just because the nice thing for me of what I've noticed the last like 2 years is I have my system.
Oh yeah.
There isn't anything really new for me that where I'm like last year I said it 100 times. Yes, I rappelled down, but other than that, everything stayed the same. Mm-hmm. Had one sticks, had my tethered saddle. You know what I mean? Like there wasn't any new gadget or gizmo.
Right.
There isn't anything new this year where, so it's kind of that, you know, I found my system.
Right.
I found what works. It's great to me and I'm good to go. Right. But it took some time to get there.
Oh yeah.
I mean, it was climber, you know, hang on to the saddle, you know, I don't know how you want to kind of go with it or like where you see a good educational piece would be, but you know, keeping things simple along those lines is really, you could do it really easily.
Oh, it's super easy to do. And particularly if you're, so mobile hunting, you can break it down into, you have saddle mobile hunting, and then you have lightweight hang-ons and climber mobile hunting. And so obviously both of them have their own system, and I would say they're relatively independent of each other. And I started off in the hang-on side, right? Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of stuff with the hang-on side. Climbers are a little bit different, obviously, because they're all one piece. But that hang-on side, you still need to use sticks. So you figure out how to get up the tree what feels best to you. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people have started to use aiders. And I will say that that's one of the simplest things I did was I did not use aiders at all for like the first year.
Okay.
Because you don't understand how freaky it can be when you step on a tree. And I'm a big dude. I'm 6'4", 220, you know, out of the shower. So I got some weight on me when I'm fully loaded. And you put your foot in that stirrup, and particularly coming down in the dark, and you miss the tree. And there your foot goes. You swing back, you're grabbing your stick. It scared the living crap out of me. And that was only on the, I only had an aider on the first stick. So I wasn't thankfully like 15 mm-hmm. foot in the air. And I said, I'm done. I'm not putting aiders on the stick. So I took aiders off. And for a year, I think I ran it without aiders. And I learned how to safely ascend and descend the tree. I wasn't able to get as high, quote unquote, but it didn't matter. I was still killing deer.
Yeah.
I was still killing deer. And I was 10 times safer. I will say that if you do not feel comfortable ascending, particularly if you don't feel comfortable ascending on something that can move on you, just don't do it. Mm-hmm. Just keep it simple and don't even do it right off the gate. And then secondarily from that, the advanced form of that is removing coming down on sticks altogether, which is the rappelling. And I will say, I know it is not, it doesn't appear to be simple at all. It is one of the simplest things. And I am so glad I was talked into doing it.
The rappelling.
Yeah. I am so glad I was talked into doing it. I was like, that's just stupid. Just climb down the tree, blah, blah, blah. And then I did it for the first time this past year. I started one sticking this past year and rappelling this past year. And how safe I was the entire time. And I got to feel like Batman.
Right.
It was just, it was the coolest thing. But I literally was just like, I have Mad Rock Ascender, or you could use Figure 8. And I ascended down the tree and I'm standing there on the ground and there was no finding my foot with the stick, looking down with the headlamp, you know, maybe thinking I need to get down a little bit earlier. I'm running out of some daylight. I want to be able to see what I'm doing.
Yep.
And it was so clean. There was never a point where you feel like your lineman's belt goes slack as you're going between sticks. That was really, I will say, I don't care what you use. Rappelling is, I know it sounds stupid, but it is genuinely the safest thing I've ever done.
Yeah. That was my consent. Like, I agree with you 100% on that. Just because for me, I'm the opposite, right? I'm 5'7" and I need that little bit of extra height. Like you, I would usually put it on that first one. And then it got to the point where using the one stick, I liked having the Backwoods Mobile GC1 aider where it could go up with you. And at first I did leave it on the bottom step. And then I was like, you know what? Maybe I'll just do that second step. And then as the season would start to come, you know, the foal just falling down. I'm like, I need to be a little bit higher. Mm-hmm. So it started coming up with me to mm-hmm. that third stick. And then usually at that point in time, I bring that fourth, but I shouldn't say never, but very rarely did I bring that eighter up on a fourth stick. It was always like that fourth stick was just on that by itself. And coming down, dude, there was a couple times where I was like, this is sketchy.
Yeah.
It wasn't the equipment. The equipment was like fine. I had that on. It was just, I just didn't feel completely safe putting my foot.
Yeah,
in
you're
that,
sitting there looking right. between your legs, holding right. the stick, trying to find
in
your foot stirrup in the dark.
Right.
Yeah.
So once again, like you said, finally when I took that jump to rappel down, done.
I could not recommend
yeah.
it more.
Yeah, that is one key thing. And dude, for what, $200 between the rope and the Mad Rock?
Well, I mean, you can even do it cheaper with a Beal jammy in it, with a Beal yeah. jammy and a figure eight. You could be $50 into it.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
that's golden.
Right.
Absolutely golden. Yeah. And yeah, sure. Now I do like the Mad Rock a yeah. lot more than a Beal jammy figure, but you could easily do it either way. And, you know, I did start one sticking to get my way up there. Now that is complicated. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no denying that one sticking is a very complicated system. And particularly at my size, but it was still, even with it, I was using the sticks I already had, so I was very comfortable with them. I wasn't changing anything last minute. I'm used to using the lineman's belt. I had started descending before that using multiple sticks. Mm-hmm. So I didn't just go just straight into it.
Right.
I didn't go straight into one sticking and rappelling and descending all at the same time. It was I had been using the stick, and I just repurposed it into a one stick. And so I know how it feels under my feet when I don't set it right. And I'd already been descending with multiple sticks. So it was, you know, I never just jumped into it head first. I always just took it in steps and kept it simple along the way. So now I'm, you know, a full-fledged one-sticking, repelling yeah. Batman ninja hunter.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, dude, I like that. That's a great way. And then for your self-filming setup, as simple as it gets, man, what do you think?
Fourth arrow all the way.
Yeah.
Fourth arrow camera arms. That, I mean, I've tried other stuff that's cheaper and quote-unquote simpler. Mm-hmm. There is a point, though, where a simple system that is built better mm-hmm. Yeah, so for there, but
that's a great point. I like that.
A simple system that's just built better.
Yep.
Right. There are very simple systems that are just built cheaply because they are cheap. Mm-hmm. And sure, the fourth arrow system is expensive, but for me as a self filmer, it's been worth every penny because you can tell when it is filmed on a quality camera arm and shoulder system. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter if you film with an iPhone. Like, keep it simple. Film with the iPhone, man. Mm-hmm. The fourth arrow makes them. Heck, you can get the cheap adapters and stuff on Amazon. You know, not that big of a deal. Of course, we, you know, we use very expensive high-end camera rigs, but you don't have to.
Right.
But just capturing the hunt moment, you know, I go back and look at hunts not because I thought the camera quality was cool. It's just a cool memory.
Yeah.
So even if you don't see anything on your iPhone and it's on YouTube forever, you go back and find it. It's like, oh, I remember that, you know, mm-hmm. whatever. And because all the memories I ever have in the past before I started filming was, you know, the meat packs in the freezer, I would write on them where I shot that animal.
Yeah.
And I'd pull that and be like, oh, that's right. That's the doe I shot in this oak flight or whatever. But now that it's on YouTube forever, it's awesome. So yeah, anything you could do what's the one that's a stabilizer camera, but I, you know,
Tacticam.
You could mm-hmm. stick a GoPro on your limb. It just mm-hmm. something to remember to relive the experience. And then you'll also learn very quickly how difficult it is to film, mm-hmm. even if it's just a GoPro. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I got the main camera rolling on the camera arm. I've got the 360 stuck to the camera arm. So that way, whenever it goes, 360 follows it. Then I've got my GoPro.
Ooh, so you have it on your camera.
Oh, dude, I'll have to show you.
Okay.
We'll take a picture of that for Instagram. Yeah. So I have a 360 mounted to a stick there. And then I have the GoPro on the bow. So I have three cameras rolling at any given time. Yeah, literally. It's just like, I'm literally, deer comes in and I'm clicking. I'm making more moving than I should be.
Yeah.
And, but you know, I've been doing this now for 10 years, going mm-hmm. on 11. So I've gotten to this point. But when I started out, it was just me and my dad's handy cam mm-hmm. in the tree. Mm-hmm. And it just being able to relive the hunt, even though it was unsuccessful, just to look back and go like, oh yeah, I started here. I tried it and kept it simple. And it made it so much more enjoyable.
Yeah. Well, it would be wrong if I didn't come in here too and talk about some clothing. So we are getting there. We're getting close. And I was actually going through my bins the other day and I was looking at everything. And I know we're talking about the Grayling hoodie.
I was just going to say, you saw the Grayling hoodie yep, there, didn't you?
I got that. And I literally, when I pulled it out and I just, I'm not going to lie, I did one of those like,
yes.
I was like,
fall is
yeah,
here.
Yeah. I smelled it. It was like, oh, okay, Ohio. You're coming
boomers.
Soon. Yeah, booners. But, you know, dude, I got to say this, and I talked about it in January when we did that episode of how much I enjoyed wearing the Huntworth clothing this past year, and I wore all the higher-end stuff in years past, and didn't notice anything different.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Other than supporting a great Pennsylvania company.
Yeah.
You know, you're working for them. Man, you want to talk about keeping things simple. The one aspect that I learned is if you have a decent base layer, but then you have a product that's actually going to keep you warm, keep you in the field longer, all that type of stuff, but now you could actually afford other pieces of gear mm-hmm. without... You know what I mean?
It makes a big difference.
And I'll say this. I had a friend that, not Nate, but I had a friend that interviewed with a company, one of the big dogs. And it's like everybody's using the same type of material.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh,
it's not like
this isn't like, coveted secrets.
It's not like company A is using blank quality.
Yeah.
That, you know what I mean?
The Gore-Tex patent, what people don't understand is that the Gore-Tex patent went out years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So all of their windproof and waterproof films and all that's public knowledge. Just
right.
No one ever cares to talk about it.
Right.
Because no one gets excited about that, right? They just like saying Gore-Tex on it.
Right.
But windproof and waterproof films in particular, graphene and the use of that is not no one owns the rights to that. That's a public use thing. It's just mm-hmm. using it right and using it in an effective way. Yeah, it's, Homer's got a lot of cool things coming down the pipe this fall.
Sweet.
I think we can officially say that. I'm very excited. We're going to a lot of shows. We're going to the Mobile Hunter Expo down in Mannheim. We're headed out to the Illinois and Iowa Deer Classic next March.
Nice.
So, yeah, I'm very excited to bring a simple solution to a person directly face-to-face starting this fall, you know, of a company that's been in Pittsburgh since, grassroots, blue collar, 2001. I mean, owned by the same husband and wife comp, but we're not private equity. We're not, we don't have special interest groups. It's literally just a bunch of us, myself included, who are just, working class Americans who really enjoy keeping it simple.
Yeah. You have pretty much every piece here.
Pretty much for people to try on.
What do you steer people towards? Like, let's do this. Let's go kind of that middle October to getting down to that early November time frame.
Yeah, you got to look at the Elkins.
Okay.
The Elkins sets.
That's what I wore.
Yeah,
a lot.
The Elkins set is like, we say the Elkins is our most versatile garment. And the reason why we say it is because it's windproof and it's got DWR. So it's not waterproof, so it still breathes, mm-hmm. But it's got a windproof film in it. So you can take that thing down to 35 degrees with that, you say, a good base layer. And we don't care what base layer you wear underneath. A lot of people really enjoy merino. We don't make a merino base layer. I don't like it because it itches for me. But, with a windproof film, a DWR finish, we make them in pants with suspender loops or bibs. So you can pick either or. And then we have what's called an in-velvet fleece on the outside. We've actually had independent testing done, and a lot of other people have done it, that it's actually the quietest midweight jacket on the market.
No way.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
By decibel reading, if you take it and rub it against itself.
Yeah.
So, and then, we offer it in two really good patterns, in the Digital Disruption and the Tarnin, which mm-hmm. you enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, the Elkin stuff, if you're gonna hunt from mid-October to mid-November, that would be...
Yeah,
that would be the way to go.
So that's what I made my video on. It was because I made that towards the end of October, and I was like, here's what I wore so far up to this point. And man, that it wasn't opening day weekend. It was the following weekend. Woke up that morning. Dude, it was chilly. And that's why I went to the spot I went to. It was a postseason scouting trip from where I was like, man, there were some rubs there. Mm-hmm. If the acorns are there, I could catch a buck slipping, mm-hmm. Maybe going into some bedding. I shot a doe that morning, but it was cold. It was raining on and off a little bit. Like you said, that DWR wasn't pouring.
No.
So I was dry. I was quiet. And dude, I love the vest. I'm a big bibs
big
guy.
Yeah.
I'm a big vest. I'm a big bibs guy. So my outfit was, I kept like a long sleeve shirt on. And then I think I went, I don't know what hoodie I had on that. I didn't have the Grayling yet. So I would have had
maybe the Shelton.
Yeah. So I think I went Shelton, and then I put the Elkins vest over top.
Yeah.
And I was.
Yeah.
And I could have honestly, I could run that system until it gets to like 40.
Yeah. Well, and you can get the jacket, really, you can get the jacket, the vest, the pants,
mm-hmm.
And then our base layer system or the Grayling hoodie for less than $500. And
your whole system.
Your whole system, and you're covered from October through November.
Yeah.
for less than $500. I mean, how simple could it possibly be?
Yeah. So, and I will say this, for the most versatile to me personally is going to be that Grayling hoodie. So,
the reason why
I'll say that is because not only what did I wear during the rut in Ohio, and temperatures, you know, fluctuated a little bit. It was a little bit warm. It was also cool. But then come turkey season, I literally just wore that. Mm-hmm. On a colder day, that's all I wore. When it warmed up, I was still fine in that.
Yeah. So the heat boost, though, the heat boost technology. So the Grayling is the first like heat boost garment that we have, right. And it has a very low pile fleece, so it's not a bunch of it. It's not super overheating, but it is warm and the soft shell. It's so comfortable.
Yes,
I wore it a pile just with a base layer, that hoodie, and then the Saskatoon, which is the next step up in terms of heat boost, vest over top. And I wore that in Ohio almost the entire trip. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking down to 35 degrees, winds blowing sideways.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Talk about, just, dude, and you were saying about quiet. That was the one aspect, like the Saskatoon on top of that. And that's what I did that setup in Ohio because it got a little bit colder. And so I transitioned from the Elkins to the Saskatoon. And that's what I found to be. So here's the other aspect, dude. The fitting on them for me is money.
It's just money.
Dead nuts.
And we make sizes from medium, which is what, you know, you're all the way up to 4XL. And then we do talls in medium tall, large tall, extra large tall, and 2XL tall.
Yeah.
So if you can't find a garment that fits you in our lineup, you're like 7'7".
Yeah.
Like it's then, and we tailor them. We don't like making just box jackets and box pants. We want these things to fit because
it has the bow hunter cut.
It's, and then we have a lot of chest pockets. We understand a lot of saddle guys do not want to put their hands down here. We want to put them up in the chest warmer pockets. So three of our jackets have chest warmer pockets. And we want to make simple, very affordable clothing and really awesome patterns that just make it easier for you when you're in the woods.
Yeah.
And that's what we really think we need.
Dude, that's the perfect way to say it. Make it easy.
Make it easy.
Right. Because other brands, like, they make good pieces. Like you said, you used to wear the Fanatic system and everything like that. But, man, that collar.
The collar was huge, and I couldn't pack it.
Yeah.
And I love packing in stuff. Like, that Saskatoon folds down to nothing. Because it's not full of polyfill and all that sort of stuff. Use the heat boost instead. And so I can roll it up on the bottom of my backpack. It makes total sense. I could never do that with the Fanatic. Yeah. And the Fanatic's a great garment. Do not get me wrong.
Oh, yeah, right.
Absolutely.
Right.
But it just did not suit my needs. It did not make my life any easier. Right. And I can't stand that.
So, like, when you're up there and you're trying to tuck this in and, you know, you go and grab and do something up in a tree and there's the buck and you're like, oh,
just anything, yeah.
That's not what you're.
I don't want anything. I want me to be my own problem. Mm-hmm. I don't need anything else to be a problem for me. I have my own. I have enough problems all by myself.
Yeah. What's your method of packing stuff in, like as far as your gear goes?
So I just dump everything into one big backpack. Okay. I predominantly use the Huntworth, the Hickory, which has a suspension belt, which I never thought I needed a backpack with a suspension belt. Until I started carrying like a lot of camera gear. And then I've got like 40 pounds, what it feels like. I think it's like 32 pounds worth of camera gear on my back. And then the platform. So it's probably close to 38 pounds. And stick. So I just dump everything in one big backpack. But if I can, I'll try to actually separate them into their own individual dump pouches within the bag. So like I know if I just pull out a whole dump pouch, you know, because I'm a saddle hunter, so I'm staring at my hip strap there around the tree, and I can just pull pouches out and they're labeled, and I can just clip them around the tree, and then I just have all my gear out. And if I need something at the bottom of the pack, I just clip everything, pull a thing out. Then unclip everything, put it back in the bag. So I don't ever have to worry about, you know, digging through the whole bag or dropping it out of the tree or whatever. Mm-hmm. And since it's in that bag, if I do drop it, I use the scorpion hook, lower it down, and actually hook it a lot easier than if it was just an individual item.
I like the little pullouts, having that. I like that.
Oh, yeah. Little pouches, you know, you could use the pulleys from Tethered. You can use full-out dump pouches. I use like I have some old AR 15 magazine pouches for simple stuff. But it just makes it nicer. I didn't realize how much stuff I could drop out of the tree until this last year. I don't know why. I just kept dropping stuff left, right, and center. And, you know, if it's your release without a lanyard on it, you're climbing down.
You're climbing down.
And that's a giant pain in the butt. But if it's in a pouch or a bag with a drawstring, and it usually sits there, kind of perches up a little bit, you can hook it, pull right back up the tree.
Yeah. That's a good tidbit because I always used to use on my release handheld. I always did put a like a little piece of paracord or something on it. Not necessarily did I use it all the time, but I was just on there and I took it off this summer. Yeah, that reminds me to do that for
Yeah, mine doesn't have one on it yet either, but I've got a few months yet. Yeah, I got a few more shoots before I get there. Yeah. But yeah, I will have to definitely want to do that because
the importance of practicing to what you just said of just even with the pulley system, getting your gear out this summer, if you plan on doing anything like that, is so important.
You could strap it to the back of a dining room chair and just stand in front. You don't even have to go outside. Mm-hmm. Like just get used to pulling all of your stuff out and what order it is, you know, particularly if you're going to film, I've really discovered how I want to have stuff out because the difference between setting up your camera arm first or setting up your camera arm last, you don't realize that when you set it up last, your bow's hanging here now. Now your quiver's hanging over here. Now you got a fish to stretch. Now you're whacking stuff off of stuff. Mm-hmm. So, like, you don't know that until you actually practice it. And you don't want to figure that out on your first hunt.
Right.
Because you just, and you don't want to, and you want to do it more than once. Mm-hmm. And like I said, it does not have to be, you don't have to climb 20 feet out of the tree. Just go to the tree in your front yard and put a backpack in front of you. And when you pull stuff out, see if it's inconvenient when you go to put one thing on versus another thing first.
Right.
And then you learn how to pack your backpack every single time.
Yeah.
And like you said, you have your system. And then that system, you don't need to change it. It's simple. It's done.
Yeah. The important, that is so important because when, even though you and I have been doing it for years and practicing and doing all that type of stuff, that first hunt always, something always just whacks you up the side of the head.
You're sitting there like, do I even own a bow? Yeah. Like you're literally standing like, I don't think I know how to put pants on. Like, I don't, what am I doing? Yeah. Been doing this for 20 years.
That's why I always get a kick out of the OKS Hunter sometimes with their memes when they'll post stuff. I'm like, my gosh, I can relate so much to
so
that.
So hard. Like even the hardest, we're talking about Andy. I guarantee you Andy gets the tree and he's just like, I don't even know what I'm doing.
You know, I just, but the key is though, for how much gear there is, for how much, people like us are out there telling you to do this, telling you to do that. Just keep it simple.
Yeah.
Because, man, the thing is, I always felt like when things were overcomplicated is because I made them overcomplicated.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you didn't do it for me. This bow thing device, this saddle device, whatever, not like that stuff didn't over, it's because I made it overcomplicated.
Yeah.
And now it's like, just settle down.
I'll say this. If you have the opportunity with any type of gear, whether it's bow, arrows, or whatever, if you have the opportunity to either go to a shop or just find somebody, I don't care if what they do is right, but at least it gives you one singular basis. So I think of my granddad a lot with this. So my granddad, who was a very well-accomplished archer, you know, got me into bow hunting and taught me how to bow hunt, you know, but kind of abandoned me at like 16 years old. And at the time, and still there are days where I get salty about it. But in reality, what I did was it gave me like 4 years of watching him do what he does. And I was like, well, that's the way I have to do it. Well, then because at least I had one way, instead of reading 47 Reddit threads and going onto Archery Talk and watching 400 YouTube channels, you just get overwhelmed. I only knew one thing. Well, then I did it and then I refined it. And then I refined it a little bit more. And then I refined it a little bit. But along the way, I was just learning from me at that point.
Right.
If you try to learn everything from everybody right off the gate, you will explode.
Yeah, you're going to be swimming.
And you'll be buying $8,000 worth of gear because you want to try a little bit of everything. Just pick somebody's mantra to go after. I mean, or somebody's method to go after and just try it and give it a full year. And if it's for you, you'll know right away. If there's bits and pieces that are for you, you'll know right away. If there are things you hate, you can get rid of them next year, but at least give it a full year to try it out. Because if you're constantly changing stuff, you'll never be comfortable with what you like. You'll never know.
Yeah. I like that, Nate. Dude, I appreciate it, man.
Absolutely, buddy.
This was fun. I've said it on that that first one we did. It is, I am so happy and so blessed that you have a shop here, that it's you, that it's you're the human that you are, man. And I appreciate you so much. And this is, we're very lucky to have that. And it's like you said earlier, it's awesome to be able to now know some people and to root for people that are locally out there doing things, whether it's on the 3D circuit, in hunting, all that type of stuff. You know, cause things could get sticky in this weird thing. And it's like, I've grown as a, you know, I'll be 37 this weekend. Like, I don't give a shit if you shoot that 10 times bigger than that or 10 times smaller than that. I just care that you did it.
Yeah.
And I'm happy for you.
Freaking, you know, fist bump, man. I mean, it's just.
It's so nice. And I think where things could get missed and construed is when you have that negative mind frame mm-hmm. about it. And just go out there and have fun, support each other. And that's what I've, like how you were saying, you look up to Andy as far as like that side of things. It's like, I tried to do that myself of like, who are good people? And you know, right off the bat,
there's not in the hunting industry, it's not hard to find them.
Right.
They're all over the place.
They are.
You'll hear from some loud mouths, but at the end of the day, most people in the hunting industry are just men and women who this is their side job. Mm-hmm. So they have a real job elsewhere. Like they don't, you know, and so they are just normal. They're moms and dads. You know, there are, I mean, even Levi Morgan, one of the greatest 3D archers we've ever seen, is still a dad of four kids mm-hmm. and his wife. And sure, he gets to travel the world and everything. But at the end of the day, he's just a dude from Pennsylvania, and he'll tell you that.
Yeah.
And so that's, yeah, keep it simple in that regard and just realize that we're all just people trying to have a good time together. And if you encourage me, I'll encourage you, and it's not a problem to do it.
No, well said, man. Well, thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Thanks for watching. Nate's one of the good ones, man. He's one of the goats. So make sure you go check him out over at Average Jack Archery. If you are coming through here in Central PA, you're going to have some really cool things happening here in the near future.
Yeah, the range is expanding. We actually just got in 5 more targets over the West Decatur 3D course.
Oh, nice.
I know, yeah. So lots of cool stuff is happening, and we're very excited. Yeah, stay tuned to us. We'll be hopefully doing a lot of big shoots this winter.
And some new things coming out from Huntworth.
New things coming out from Huntworth.
All right, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for watching. And for all the support, check Nate out. Antler up.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Antler Up podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. Please go check us out on our Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, and Go Wild, and at antlerupoutdoors.com. If you enjoyed this episode, go leave a review and subscribe for next week's episode. Until then, Antler Up.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.